Radio 4 Extra, this Monday to Friday at 11 in the morning and again in the evening at 9.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Now, Vincent begins his artistic studies and embarks on a troubled relationship. Mark Rylance reads Vincent van Gogh, The Letters.
To Theo van Gogh, The Hague, 22nd January, 1882. My dear Theo, I may have written to you only yesterday, but I'm writing again even so. For although I still have some measure of courage, it's sometimes difficult for me to bear up bravely in the presence of Mauve and Tersteeg. This morning I felt so miserable that I took to my bed and was feverish from nervous exhaustion. If I go on working hard, it won't be long before I'll be earning something, but until then I've got terrible worries. I have relatively few drawing materials, or otherwise inadequate ones. Sometimes my clothes need things done to them, regarding which Mauve has already told me a thing or two. And then it sometimes happens that one can't help being terribly depressed. Yesterday I had a lesson from Mauve on drawing hands and faces, on keeping the paint layer thin. Mauve knows it all so well, and when he says something, I make an effort to put it into practice. Now that I've written to you, I'll set to work again in good faith. In Eton this summer, you talked about wanting me to start working in watercolour. At the time, I saw no way to do it. Now it's beginning to dawn on me. And in spite of everything, the sun is rising. Ever yours, Vincent. The Hague, 26th of January, 1882. My dear Theo, I received your letter and the 100 francs enclosed. Thank you. What I feared would happen when last I wrote has now come about, namely that I fell ill and spent 3 days lying in bed with fever and anxiety. Mauve came to see me and we agreed again to bear up bravely through it all. Now it's over, inasmuch as I got up last night and pottered around a bit, and when this morning the model came with Mauve, I arranged her in a pose and tried to draw a little, but I can't yet. And this evening I felt completely weak and miserable. I'm sorry that you're not well either. When I was in Brussels last winter, I had baths 2 or 3 times a week in the bathhouse, and I felt very well. I don't doubt but it would also help you a lot. And I'll tell you frankly, that I definitely think you mustn't be embarrassed about going to a girl now and then, if you know one you can trust. One doesn't have to overdo that kind of thing, but nature has fixed laws, and it's fatal to struggle against them. It would be good for you, it would be good for me, if we were married, but what can one do? I'm sending you a little drawing, fairly thin and washed quickly. Yet it will perhaps prove to you that it's not a hopeless case, that I'm beginning to get the hang of it, rather. Accept a handshake and thought. Adieu. Ever yours, Vincent. The Hague, 6th of April, 1882. My dear Theo, I myself am now in a period in which I'm deriving some benefit from my earlier worries, because as things are now, every week I make one thing or another that I couldn't make before, and it's the awareness that nothing, except sickness, can rob me of the strength that's now beginning to develop. Recently I've been making many studies of parts of the figure, heads, neck, breast, shoulder. See the enclosed scratch. I'd very much like to make more studies of the nude. The Hague, 14th of April, 1882. My dear Theo, I received your last letter with the 150 francs enclosed, and thank you most sincerely. I'm glad that you saw something in the drawing I sent. Yes, I know that Ma is ill, and I also know many more somber things. Since last summer, it's become very clear to me that the disharmony between Pa and Ma and me has become a chronic condition, because for too long there was misunderstanding between us. As it is now, I'm half stranger and half tiresome person and precious little else to Paranmore. And for my part, I have an empty, lonely feeling at home. And sometimes it's best to avoid one another in such a case. Made another study of the nude today, a kneeling female figure, and yesterday the pose of a woman knitting, but also nude. Well, sleep well. It's deep in the night. Thanks again for what you sent. Ever yours, Vincent. The Hague, 21st of April, 1882. My dear Theo, I sometimes think to myself, if only my life were a bit easier, how much better I'd be able to work. At the end of January, Malva's attitude towards me suddenly changed, as unfriendly as he'd been friendly. I attributed it to dissatisfaction with my work and became extremely upset. Once he spoke to me about drawing from plaster casts in a tone that even the worst teacher at the academy wouldn't have used, and I held my peace, but at home I got so angry that I threw the plaster mouldings into the coal scuttle. Broken. I began going there less and less, and Marvin never came to see me anymore. The Hague, 7th of May, 1882. My dear Theo, today I met Malva and had a very regrettable conversation with him, which made it clear that Malva and I have parted ways forever. I asked him to come and see my work and talk things over. Malva refused, outright. In the end, he said, "You have a vicious character." At that point, I turned around, it was in the dunes, and walked home alone. I won't ask him to explain such a thing to me. People suspect me of something. Vincent is keeping something back that may not be divulged. Well, gentlemen, I'll tell you, you who set great store by manners and culture, what is more cultured, more manly, to forsake a woman or to take on a forsaken one? This winter I met a pregnant woman, abandoned by the man whose child she was carrying, a pregnant woman who roamed the street, who had to earn her bread, you can imagine how. I took that woman as a model. I couldn't give her a model's wage, but I paid her rent and have been able, thank God, to preserve her and her child from hunger. I went with her to Leiden, where there's a maternity hospital she'll go to for her confinement. I've progressed with my drawing by having a good model. This woman is now attached to me like a tame dove. For my part, I can marry only once, and when would be a better time to do it than with her? The Hague, 10th of May, 1882. My dear Theo, if I said things in my last letter about her that are rather somber, it's because I'm not living in a bed of roses, but in reality. People will say, "You're lowering yourself and you're too poor," to which I reply, "If I go to live in a house consisting of a studio, one room, and a little kitchen, and go about things simply, it can be done." The woman I'm with now understands me. I was perhaps more able than others to understand her because she has a couple of peculiar habits that many would find repellent. First of all, her speech, which is ugly, then her temper, which stems from a nervous disposition. I understand these things. They don't bother me. She isn't a burden, a millstone around my neck. Instead, she helps and works with me. And being a labourer, I belong to the working class and shall live and put down roots in that sphere more and more. I can't do anything else. I can't imagine anything else. Adieu. Ever yours, Vincent. The Hague, 14th of May, 1882. My dear Theo, having received your letter of 13th of May, which must have crossed one from me, I think I should explain some things. I met Sine, as you know, when she was pregnant, ill, in the cold. I was alone. I'm reconciled to her past, and she is reconciled to my past. And now she's soon going to Leiden, and immediately afterwards I would like to marry her. Now, I do believe, Theo, that I've brought no shame on my family by what I've done, and I wish that my family were reconciled to it. Otherwise, we confront each other, and I say for my part, not for anyone's sake will I abandon a woman to whom I am tied by a bond woven by mutual help and respect. Adieu, old chap. But before you strike the blow and chop off my head, and Christine's, and the child's too, sleep on it again. The Hague, 8th of June, 1882. My dear Theo, should you come here towards the end of June, I hope you'll find me back at work, but at present I'm in hospital. For some 3 weeks I'd been suffering a good deal, and now it turns out that I've got a very mild case of what's known as a dose of the clap. So I have to stay quietly in bed, swallow a lot of quinine tablets, and from time to time have instillations of pure water. There's no reason for you to be in the least concerned, but as you know, one has to take this sort of thing seriously and act immediately, because neglect can make it incurable. Scene comes to see me on visiting days and is getting ready to leave. I think of her a great deal. May she come through it safely. Did you get the two little drawings? The Hague, 2nd of July, 1882. My dear Theo, Scene gave birth last night. Had a very difficult delivery, but thank God she survived, together with a jolly nice little boy. Her mother and child and I went there together. Theo, I was so happy when I saw her again. The Hague, 6th of July, 1882. Dear brother, having received your letter and the 100 francs enclosed, I thank you most sincerely and feel the need to write to you straight away. I most certainly do appreciate what Pa and Ma did during my illness. However, that's not why I didn't immediately write about Scene. Pa and Ma aren't the sort of people to understand me, neither my faults nor my better side. What's to be done? Here's my plan. I hope to arrange things so that next month I invite Pa to stay with me for a few days. I want to show him Scene, as well as the house and the studio, with all manner of work in progress. I'll tell him how Scene has devoted herself utterly, with practical skill, to helping me in my work. I would like Pa to have a clear impression of a new future for me. I don't think it's superfluous to tell you again what I feel for Scene. I have a sense of being at home when I'm with her, a sense that we have grown together. I count it a great blessing that my thoughts and capacity for work have found a focus, a particular direction. You can see what the result is. Now, if you come, you won't find me dejected or melancholy, but you'll enter a setting with which I believe you'll be satisfied. A young studio, a still young, fully functioning household. You know that I wasn't always happy and sometimes truly wretched, and now, through your help, my youth is emerging, and my true development. Adieu. Thank you for everything. And a handshake, and believe me, ever yours, Vincent.
Tomorrow, Vincent, full of hopes for an artistic new beginning, leaves Paris for the warmth of the south of France. Mark Rylance was reading Vincent van Gogh, The Letters. It was abridged by Doreen Estill and produced by Emma Harding.
It's funny what you hear on Radio 4 Extra.
My lord! Your grace! Your eminence!
Look into my eyes, my eyes, look into my eyes, the eyes, the eyes. Not around the eyes, don't look around the eyes, look into my eyes.
This lady.
There was a genius for you.
Don't be ridiculous.
What am I gonna do? I don't know.
Oh, cheer up.
Ooh, I want to be like you.
He wants a right punch up the bracket.
That's reach coming from here.
Oh dear, oh dear.
There's every kind of funny here on Radio 4 Extra.
And among today's offerings, Dilemma, new to 4 Extra. Sue Perkins puts the comedians Tom Rigglesworth and Lucy Beaumont and the journalist Anne McElvoy and the comedy writer Joel Morris through the moral, ethical and comical ringers. That's in Dilemma at 10 o'clock tonight.
BBC. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock. Hello, this is Susan Ray with the final episode of J.B. Priestley's play The Good Companions. And today the concert party have hit rock bottom. Their manager and angel, Miss Trant, threatens to pull the plug and leave them all to their fate. And Mel's looking across the pond to our neighbours in New York as today's 4 o'clock show takes a trip to some famous Big Apple landmarks. That's in an hour from now. So into the world of The Good Companions again for the final time in J.B. Priestley's tale of a travelling stage company. There have been a few ups and downs of late, and as is often the case, it may get worse before it gets better.
The Good Companions by J.B. Priestley, dramatised by Eric Pringle. Part 3.
Here we are again, unhappy as can be, not good friends and miserable company. Well, look at us. It's noon on Saturday, and we're gathered on stage as instructed, anxious and subdued, especially our banjoist Morton Mitchum, who's lurking in a corner in disgrace. We've heard nothing of Jimmy, our comedian, or Jerry, the dancing wizard, and fear the worst from our angel, Miss Trant. When she appears, Mitchum pounces.
Miss Trant, I owe you an apology. I understand I let down the show last night, and I offended you personally. I'm very sorry. I throw myself upon your mercy.
All right, Mr. Mitchum. We won't say anything
Miss
more
Trant,
about Hoppy.
That is generous of you. Wonderful. But it won't do. Something must be said. I ought to be ashamed of myself. I am ashamed. But I doubt if I'm sufficiently ashamed. Tell me how disappointed and disgusted you are.
If you insist, I think you behaved very stupidly.
Pardon me for interrupting, but I have to say in my defense that it couldn't have happened anywhere but Tuber. The place, the people, the rooms, the theater, the show frozen out every night. Believe me, Miss Trant, I'm an old trooper, 4 times round the world, but I've nerves. And this place has just got on 'em. Here in Tubra, I touch rock bottom.
And so have I. And that is why I've called this meeting. Have any of you thought about my feelings? And is it worth our giving a performance tonight?
Oh, why shouldn't we? There are still 5 of us.
I agree. There's no sense turning money away.
Inigo?
It's all the same to me. If we've got to stay, we might as well give a show and help bring the loss down a bit. But if you say let's pack up and go on to the next place, I'm your man.
But is it worth going on at all?
Oh, Miss...
Now, please don't misunderstand me. It's not money I'm thinking about, though I've lost a good deal. It's something else. I know I shouldn't have rented this dreadful theatre. But you might have stood by me.
You can't blame us because Jimmy had a heart attack.
No, that couldn't be helped, but other things could. The quarrelling. Not bothering about the show, not trying to make the best of it. What attracted me to this concert party more than anything was the way you were all so loyal and kept so cheerful and friendly under the most horrible conditions. But now, I'm afraid I don't see it like that anymore.
No, I suppose you don't. And I can't blame you, but... Oh, I'm sorry. You don't know how sorry I am.
Nay, lass, take it easy. No, I don't suppose any of you want to hear what I've got to say, but I'm saying it any road. I say stick it, Miss Trant. Give this up now, and it might as well never have started. No, but go on a bit, and you never know, happening a fortnight afore a week, we're coin in brass and they can't make enough on us. Nay, if we're not right up at top of tree almost afore you can say Jack Robinson, I'll eat this cap.